Hi, everybody. My name is Bianca Mobius-Kloon. I'm a postdoc at Cornell University. I'm going to attempt to, in 15 minutes, tell you about four papers worth written on the subject. So there'll probably be some questions at the end. I will try to make it as intelligible as possible. To start this, soil quality. The current status of soil quality assessment, we have very widely established standardized approaches to air and water quality management and air and water quality assessment, but we don't really have that for soil quality. There's a lot of indices, a lot of indicators out there, and they've mostly been used for research purposes, and less so have we really applied them on the farm to help farmers make management decisions. We also have nutrient testing that, at least in the United States, is highly available to farmers. We've had a lot of success because we have the ability to test and therefore change our management. But we don't have that kind of testing available currently in a standardized way for biological and physical processes. Yet at the same time, not only is this kind of assessment not available in developing nations, but on the other hand, the Hunger Task Force is telling us, well, restoring soil health is often the first entry point to getting food security to come about. So what do we do about that? Well, I've been working with a team of folks, a very integrative team of folks at Cornell University to develop the Cornell Soil Health Test. It's been available to the public, so farmers can send us samples, since 2006. It was developed mostly for the northeastern United States, but we've been getting a lot of interest from around the world. It measures 15 indicators, physical, biological, and chemical indicators. And those indicators represent agronomically essential soil processes. So we're really trying to go at what the soil needs to be able to do to grow a proper crop. The other thing is this test is fairly inexpensive. It's rapid. And it requires minimal infrastructure, which made us think, oh, this could be, oops, how do I go back? There we go. No, sorry about that. So we really thought this could be potentially useful internationally, not just in the United States. The test identifies constraints in these processes. You see a lot of red here. Red means those soil processes are constrained. Sorry, I seem to not be able to use this mouse. And it then therefore guides management by the farmer based on this test. You'll see here, that's our website. We have a whole manual on all of these tests, exactly how we do them, how to interpret things, how to link these processes to management. So our question was, can we apply this somewhere else internationally? So we took it to Western Kenya because we had some folks that have established a very nice chronosequence there. Our objectives were basically, okay, we've got this developed in the United States. First, we wanted to develop scoring functions so that we could interpret the same measured indicators in the context of an African setting. We then wanted to see, can we assess soil quality and monitor soil quality with that test in a totally different area? Can we improve yield by eliminating constraints in soils? And can we use this kind of a test to help farmers make decisions in their management? So we used a pre-established 80-year chronosequence established by a bunch of other people, Kinyangi Ngoze, Kimeto, all in Johannes Lehmann's lab. So we had very nice background data. Here's the Kakamega and Nandi Forest margins. It's very nice that, that you just basically introduced this whole area because that's exactly the area that I did this work in. So all of those constraints that he was just talking about apply there. Basically, forest is converted to agriculture. Maize is grown twice a year. There are no inputs, like he was just talking about. And so we get a lot of soil degradation. And the thing is, there's not just chemical degradation. We're not just losing nutrients, but we're also losing those biological and physical processes. So the sites we sampled, forests, experimental maize plots, and kitchen gardens. So kitchen gardens and these maize plots at each farm. I'm going to mostly talk about continuous maize with no inputs versus kitchen garden, but I also had these short-term organic matter additions where 16 months before I came and sampled, a bunch of organic matter had been put in, and we wanted to see whether we could still see that. We measured a set of indicators. I'm not going to go in depth on each of these. It's changed a little bit from the test that we do in the Northeast. mainly two fewer biological indicators, and we had electrical conductivity in there because it's easy to measure. The main thing here is indicators linked to soil processes. So we measure an indicator, and that value tells us something about whether a soil process is functioning or not, or somewhere in between. So we need to be able to interpret what that number means in terms of functioning. Therefore, we develop scoring functions. And the way one can develop a scoring function, we can either go on literature values. For example, pH, we know that a pH of, say, 6.5 is really good, and that 4 or 8 is bad, so that gives us sort of a natural scoring function. But some things are not as well established in terms of actual numbers, so we use local conditions to do that. And we develop these scoring functions so that we can use very well-known functions. Basically, we used a Gaussian distribution for a lot of these, and we used just Microsoft Excel software so that just about anybody can do this sort of work. So these are pretty easily transferable. Scoring functions are basically, we have an indicator value at the bottom here and then a score, where 0 is bad or constrained. Any score that's less than 30 is a soil constraint. Any score that's above 70 is optimum soil functioning, and what's yellow between 30 and 70 is in between. So we can have a more is better function. So aggregate stability, that the more stable the soil is, the stronger the crumbs are, the better the score, because that's more optimal. We can have a less is better. If the soil is harder, that's worse. So a harder score means you get a harder measurement means you get a lower score. After we develop these scoring functions, we could then create a report like this. So here's our values in physical, biological, and chemical indicators. And then here's our scores. And you can see it's color-coded so that a grower can look at this and see, OK, this is mostly red. There's a lot of constraints in the soil beyond just nutrients. We need to look at these other functions because they're really important for crop growth. So we give a rating to each indicator, but we also came up with a composite soil health index that goes at the bottom here. So for example, here we have very low soil health with a 29 out of 100. So can we use, now that we have scores, we have values that we've measured, can we use that to distinguish management differences, because a test like this needs to be sensitive to management? Can we establish the status of soil quality constraints, and can we monitor when degradation happens over time? So I'm just going to throw a couple of graphs like this up. Yellow here is that control plot or continuous maze with no inputs. The light green is average organic matter additions between all of those different organic matters that were applied 16 months before I sampled. So there might be a bit of a difference there, we figured. And we could see that here, for example, aggregate stability was slightly higher, significant at 0.1, in these average organic matter treatments. But then when we compare kitchen gardens to all of the maize plots, we had much, much higher aggregate stability there, because kitchen gardens receive all of the household waste. They get cooking ash. They have lots of different plants that grow in them and not just maize. Similarly, for example, for organic carbon, this was not a significant difference between the average recent organic matter additions and the continuous maize, but we could see that the kitchen gardens were much better off. Now, interestingly here, subsurface hardness, these continuous maize plots were just about fine. These average organic matter additions had much higher compacted values. Now, why was that? This was sort of puzzling. We couldn't quite figure it out at first. Then I talked to the guy who was in the field, and he said, oh, well, we were mostly concerned with carbon dynamics. So they homogenized these organic additions into the soil so much that they actually tilled the soil 6 times in a year instead of just twice. And they did this when it had just rained, because that's when the soil is softer, and so it's easier to work in organic matter. That really tells us the importance of a test like this. We've now compacted our soil in just 3 seasons of additions. So we were trying to do a good thing, but we didn't do it quite the right way, so now we've got compaction. Similarly, with these kitchen gardens, they're much more intensively managed, so you could see they're also kind of up there. So we have compaction problems, and we don't usually measure those. This is really important to look at. Our active carbon values, this is representative of the biological activity in the soil. Again, we see a slight difference that isn't significant, but our kitchen gardens are much higher. Here's two soil reports side by side. Here we have a forest, and here we have 77 years in no input maize. The main point I want to make here is, yeah, we can with this test assess the status of soil quality. We see there's a lot of constraints that have developed over time. We also saw this when we were just looking at our measured values. Here's just a couple of examples. Aggregate stability in these continuous maize plots that didn't get anything dropped rapidly. We lost, I think it was about 60% of our aggregate stability over time, whereas kitchen gardens dropped a little bit in aggregate stability, but not as much. And we saw a similar trend as that in many indicators. Active carbon, again, similarly, we had a huge drop, actually, more than the total organic carbon in the continuous maize farms that never really got any inputs. And we saw less of that degradation in kitchen gardens. Now, an interesting piece was several of the chemical indicators, actually, we saw degradation in the control plots, in the continuous maize plots, but we actually saw an accumulation in some of the kitchen gardens, which tells us something about how these plots are managed and how useful a test like this could be. So, can we use this test to help us improve yields? We had these very old farms that got very low yields, and I'm sure you've seen this in Kenya. When the soil degrades, we don't get much anymore. This might be a ton, it might be only half a ton, whereas these new farms that had just come out of the forest were getting incredibly good yields, up to 10 tons per hectare. So we ran several different models looking at the values that we had measured, looking at the scores after using the scoring functions, looking at just single indicators, looking at multiple indicators. What we see here, without accounting for the variability between farms, with a multiple linear regression, we could predict 38% of the variability in grain yield, 47% of the variability in stover yield. An interesting piece was that our active carbon value, that biologically active organic matter, was the single best predictor of yield. It didn't predict much of the variability, but for one single indicator to predict 16 to 31% of variability in a yield component, we thought was pretty good. Now, when we actually put into the model farm as a random factor, so now we're accounting for farmer management, for slight differences in soil type, all of those, when we just put that in as a random factor, we were actually able to predict up to 65% of the variability in yield using these indicator values and scores. Also, when we looked at the number of constrained indicators, so if you remember that report card, we measured 12 different things. The number of values that were constrained, so got a score below 30, were highly correlated with grain yield. So the more indicators we had, the less grain yield we got. The more indicators were constrained, the less stover yield we had. And from these regressions here, we actually could say that if we just eliminated one constraint in this example across this series, we could get 0.25 tons per hectare more grain and 0.6 tons per hectare more stover just by eliminating one constraint. So how can we eliminate those constraints? Can we use a test like that for that purpose? Well, there's various ways to go about that. The idea is, again, we're looking at soil processes, soil functions. Can we change our management to specifically address those functions? There are some constraints that are pretty easy to address. So for example, if we have compaction, if we have pH that's too high from adding too much wood ash, if we have nutrients that are too high, which did sometimes happen in the Trona sequence, we can do something about it. We can create raised beds. We can minimize foot traffic, we can apply wood ash. There's things we can easily do, whereas other things are much harder because of some of the constraints that exist in a place like Kenya. It's hard to come up with extra organic matter to add. It's hard to come up with cover crop seeds. But there were actually some opportunities that we saw just within this Krona sequence. Here's one example of that. Here we have our continuous maize again, lots of red. We have our kitchen garden. There's a lot less red there, but you'll see that where the red is in very different places. So for example, our aggregate stability is limited in this continuous maize, and it's just about fine in the kitchen garden. Subsurface hardness, on the other hand, this soil is pretty soft, it's just fine, but the kitchen garden has received so much traffic that it's compacted. the farmer can look at this and learn something from this and say, how am I treating my continuous maize? Can I change the way that I manage my kitchen garden to be more like that, maybe raised beds? Also here, for instance, especially the pH, 5.85 is still pretty good. We had some farms that were 4.8 in pH in the continuous maize. But here, 7.95 of a pH in this kitchen garden is way too high. You can see at the bottom, this is very low, the kitchen garden is medium. This kitchen garden would be better off if there were less inputs here, because the pH would go down if you took some of the wood ash and applied it somewhere else instead, because wood ash is a really good liming agent. Also, potassium and phosphorus are plenty high enough in this kitchen garden, but they're constrained over here. So just transferring some things from one to the other would help this one farmer. So if they had access to a test like this, they really could start to do something even without extra input of money. So just across the sequence that I measured, 40 farms, 200 and something samples, there were actually anywhere from 25 to 40% of the farms where the farms had a potential to transfer some of these inputs to have better soil health in another field. And actually, in 18 to 40% of the cases, there were actually possibilities to alleviate a constraint. So one field was in the red, and another field was so far into the green that they didn't need all those extra inputs. So from this, we conclude that the Cornell Soil Health Test was definitely successful for monitoring soil quality degradation dynamics, for assessing soil quality constraints and management effects. It related to yield and identified those constraints well, and it can inform management decisions. So what are the implications of this? This test requires very minimal infrastructure. About $3,000 could take, I think, 6 of these indicators into the field, and about $10,000, I think it was, that we came up with, could create a small lab that could do more of these just in a lab, in a fee-based kind of system. So we could use this for applied research, for low-budget extension, for the kind of NGO that you were just talking about. Also, because it identifies soil constraints and management differences, an NGO and farmer communities could really interact with each other and interactively target the management constraints that they're finding and redistribute on-farm resources that they already have. They could experiment locally with this. And because it shows degradation and aggradation trends well, this could potentially be used by governments and NGOs for monitoring purposes. So with that, thank you very much. Again, here's the website with more information about this test, and I'd be happy to take questions, but I might not have time.